Hello, everyone. My name is Mikhailo, and I'm a second-year student studying computer and data science. I'll be reading the Bible for you guys today. So there are two sets of scriptures. There's Proverbs 1, chapter 1, verses 1 to 7, and after that, we'll be reading Proverbs chapter 9, 1 to 18. If you don't have a Bible, please raise your hand up, and one of our lovely welcomers will give you a white book. And it's roughly halfway through, nearly. So yeah, that is page 438 for Proverbs 1, and then we'll flip over to page 443 straight after. So yeah, we'll start off with Proverbs chapter 1, 1 to 7. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance, for understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Wisdom has built her house. She has set up its seven pillars. She has prepared her meat and mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her servants, and she calls from the highest point of the city. Let all who are simple come to my house. To those who have no sense, she says, come, eat my food, and drink the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways, and you will live. Walk in the way of insight. Whoever corrects a mocker invites insults. Whoever rebukes the wicked incurs abuse. Do not rebuke mockers, or they will hate you. Rebuke the wise, and they will love you. Instruct the wise, and they will be wiser still. Teach the righteous, and they will add to their learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For through wisdom, your days will be many, and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, your wisdom will reward you. If you are a mocker, you alone will suffer. Folly is an unruly woman. She is simple and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house, on a seat at the highest point of the city, calling out to those who pass by, who go straight on their way. Let all who are simple come to my house. To those who have no sense, she says, stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. But little do they know that the dead are there, that her guests are deep in the realm of the dead.
Thank you, Mikhailo. If I haven't met you, my name's Tim. It's great to be with you. Like Matt, who has been speaking, I'm one of the staff workers with the Christian Union. There's an outline of where we're going on the handout that you're given. I hope that's going to be helpful. I just need to set up my PowerPoint. Well, I'm going to make a wild stab in the dark. I reckon, that at some stage in your life so far, you've done something really dumb. Have you? I don't mean necessarily wrong, illegal, just something really stupid. Maybe you stayed up so late the night before that you slept through your alarm and missed the exam. Maybe you didn't take any water on that hike on a hot day and you almost died of dehydration. Or you misread the signs. You thought she was interested and you tried to hold hands and it backfired on you. Maybe you bought one of those too-good-to-be-true bargains, and it was a total waste of money. I can still remember the day I drove up a one-way street, the wrong way. I was only driving one way, in a bus, past the courthouse, at 9 a.m. in the morning when the police were all just hanging around the outside. I also knocked over a sign halfway along the street. Stupid, dumb things. And at those points in time, we realise that what we need, what we crave, is some wisdom. And lots of people offer wisdom. Every financial counsellor out there is offering wisdom. Every psychological counsellor out there is offering wisdom. Lifestyle TV is offering wisdom. You know what the UWA motto is, don't you? Seek wisdom. At least it used to be. I don't know whether it still is. That is, the founders of UWA had a vision for this institution. It wasn't about passing exams and careers. It was about students, young people, gaining wisdom through education of some sort. Pursuing wisdom, not pursuing impossible. And the Bible, God's word, has a lot to say about wisdom. It endorses our desire for wisdom. And today we're starting a series looking at some of the what's called the wisdom literature in the Bible. In the Old Testament, particularly the book of Proverbs, Job, Ecclesiastes. And we'll do a bit of a flyover over 4 weeks in the rest of this semester. But let's move on. What is wisdom exactly? Well, if you've read any of the book of Proverbs, you'll know that a lot of wisdom comes in these little aphorisms. That's the sort of technical term for them. Short, pithy sayings. Here's some examples from Proverbs 19. A man's own folly ruins his life, yet his heart rages against the Lord. You ever seen that? Blame God. Blame anybody but yourself for your own stupidity. Wealth brings many friends, but a poor man's friends deserts him. Not quite sure whether that's a tragedy or a good thing, but that's reality, isn't it? That's what happens. A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who pours out lies will not go free. In Hebrew, the language this is written in, wisdom normally comes in aphorisms that are two lines long, sort of have a parallel. You go over it twice. That encapsulates some wisdom. But wisdom is not mere intelligence. Proverbs chapter 30, four things on earth are small, yet they're extremely wise. And the first thing he says is ants. Ants are creatures of little strength, yet they store up food in the summer. Now, my guess is if an ant did an ATAR to try and get into UWA, they would not get very far. They lack IQ. You beat them hands down, but they have wisdom. They actually know how to make life work. They make good decisions about food storage. That is, wisdom is practical. It's not just books and theory. I did 4 years of an engineering degree at uni. I graduated. In theory, I knew how to be an engineer, but I didn't have a clue. I spent 2 years working as an engineer trying to find out what it actually looks like and what I needed to do the job, because university didn't give me much of that at all. You can't get it from books like that. You could say it's the art of successful living in the real world of work and family, of money and friendship. The opposite is foolishness, making dumb decisions. Instead of sleeping at the right time, you sleep at the wrong time or sleep through the wrong time. Wisdom is when you can get that bargain, which really is a bargain. It's the insights that allow you to successfully navigate life, the challenges and the opportunities that present themselves in day-to-day life. Now, wisdom, in some sense, stands outside the main storyline of the Bible. The main storyline of the Bible is God's dealings with humanity, creating us in his image, us rejecting him, and God beginning this intricate long-term plan to restore us into relationship with him, into a new world in which evil and all its effects are eradicated. It's a wonderful story. It's an epic. And I hope you're captivated by that epic story and you've learnt to start to follow it and be excited by it. But wisdom is sort of like outside that. It's life anywhere, anytime. It shares some of the same concerns as that story, but has a different approach. So here's just to get a feel for it. The law does this. If you think about lying and false testimony, the law says, don't do it. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Just don't do it. The prophets come along and say, you guys are doing it and God's going to take action. But wisdom has a slightly different approach to the same thing. A false witness will not go unpunished. He who pours out lies will not go free. Notice it's an observation. It says, what actually happens in the world out there? And this is the sort of thing that happens. It doesn't draw any conclusions from it. It doesn't say, don't do it. It just says, recognise the patterns of this world, the way things work in our world. And the opening paragraphs of the book of Proverbs, which is where we're going to spend some of our time today, introduce us to the purpose and the form of wisdom. Notice here it says in chapter 1, verse 2 and 3, that these proverbs are for attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life. That's what it's for. So you can live a life that's wise, that is successful, navigating all the challenges of life, gives you insight. So you can live a prudent life, not an impulsive, reckless life, but a life that actually works because of the decisions you make. Verses 4 and 5, it says who it's for. It's for the simple and the young. That is, the naive. Those still wet behind the ears. They haven't seen enough of life yet to actually know how it works. Well, this is for those sort of people. But it's also for the wise. Those who've already built some wisdom, it's for them as well to increase their wisdom. Now, I don't know where you put yourself in this. Are you the simple or the wise? Somewhere on that spectrum, wherever you are, the Proverbs are for you and for me. And they come in the form of these, they're called proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. Notice it uses the word riddles. That is, the meaning is not always straightforward. The book of Ecclesiastes calls them goads. A goad is something that just irritates you, but you can't get rid of it. You know, like when you've got a stone in your shoe, and it just irritates you. You can't ignore it. And the proverbs, the parables, the riddles are like that. They're meant to get under your skin because you don't really understand them, but they make you think. They provoke you to look at life more realistically and understand more about it. So wisdom is not spoon-feeding you. It isn't learning by rote, like anatomy. What do you do in anatomy? Well, you just learn all the different bones of the body and you memorise them, and then you can answer any question. But wisdom is not like that. You can't learn it. It isn't a set of rules. When this happens, do this. Because life doesn't work that way. It's not about keeping rules. It's about having insight so you can make good decisions in every different sort of circumstance that comes your way. It's not like those YouTube videos that just tell you how to do something. Mechanistic. Step one, step two, step three. Wisdom is very different. Hidden away at... I'll come back to that in a minute. I've lost something. Doesn't matter. We'll find it later. Hidden away in the back blocks of UWA with ferns growing all over it is a plaque that says, "Seek wisdom." Does anybody know where it is? It's between physics and the Reed Library. Can't find it. But I suspect UWA has got a little bit embarrassed because that's no longer their call. And so they've let it just be covered up with all the greenery. But the wisdom of the Bible is a little bit like the wisdom that many cultures have. Sort of every culture has a way of crystallising, summarising the insights that wise people have. One we get in English, I don't know if you're familiar with it, is a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. You ever heard that? Now, let me ask you, is that only relevant if you're chasing birds? No, it's meant to be encapsulated wisdom from one little incident, one little experience that is actually relevant to lots and lots of experiences in life. That to have something actually in hand is often much more valuable than possibilities, probabilities even. It's a bit of encapsulated wisdom. And this is what the Hebrews did. This is what the Bible does. So here's this one again. Wealth brings many friends, but a poor man's friend deserts them. I want you to talk to the person next to you and just discuss what wisdom might you learn from this little couplet. They just sat together. What might you learn from that that might help you navigate life? Okay, any suggestions? Just open, slather. Nothing's right or wrong. Tell me what you think. What did you work out? Let me ask you then. Is anybody here got lots of friends? Has anybody got no friends? Yeah, it makes you think, doesn't it? It's meant to make you think. We'll come back to it. Many cultures have these sort of aphorisms, this wisdom. There is one from Confucius. There's another one from Confucius. Notice how they try to put in sort of memorable ways that capture something that gives you an idea of how to navigate life. This is an African one. That is, wisdom is ubiquitous. All cultures have it and they express it in different ways. But biblical wisdom has a different foundation. Verse 7 of Proverbs 1, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge or wisdom, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. That is, the Bible insists that the starting point for true wisdom is the fear of the Lord, the fear of God. So in the Bible, it's not the intelligentsia who says there is no God. It's the fool who says there is no God, who suppressed the truth that this world is created and that I'm a creature of a creator, and tries to build life on that lie that I'm free to do as I please, that I'm the centre of my universe, I'm a self-made person. That to fear God is the opposite. It's to humbly recognise that God is God and I'm not. I live at his pleasure. He's at the centre. And when you realise that, true wisdom starts to flow. Let me try and give you an example, very current sort of one. We're very confused at the moment about gender and sex. Now, the obvious thing that anybody can see is that men and women have some differences. That's not hard to see, is it? But what do we do with those differences? So if you sideline God, then there can't be any purpose in the difference. It's just an accident of biology. So you've got lots of choices. You could say difference means unequal. Therefore, my campaign is to make sure the genders are exactly equal. In fact, to get rid of all gender distinctions whatsoever. So in Sweden, there's been a campaign going for a while now to get rid of all the pronouns of he, she, and replace them with just one, hen. Whether you're a guy or a girl, hen. That's what you are. That's the pronoun. To try and eradicate all gender difference, be gender neutral. Or you might say, hold on, difference, that means we're competitors. We've got to fight each other. It's me against you. It's survival of the fittest. Or you could say, difference, that's just a social construct. And if it's a social construct, we're free to construct it in a different way, any way we feel like it. Let's be fluid in it. But someone who fears the Lord won't approach it that way. They'll say, Lord God, why did you make us different? What's your purpose in making us different? And what we find in the Bible is that God says he makes us different in order to be complementary, in order to fit together and form a whole. Therefore, you value difference and you value the other and enjoy the difference. Now, wisdom in the Bible has a backstory, a background that starts particularly with Solomon. Proverbs 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, the king of Israel. Solomon was the king who succeeded his father David on the throne when Israel was at its height, culturally, economically, military, in every way. He was king for a long time. And when he ascended to the throne, he asked God for one thing. He asked for wisdom. And this is what God did. God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight, a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom is greater than the wisdom of all the men in the east, greater than all the wisdom of Egypt. He was wiser than Ethan and Hermon. Where's Ethan? We've got some Ethans here, haven't we? Wiser than you, Chalcol, Darda, the sons of Mahal. His fame spread through all the surrounding nations. And Solomon became known, just famous for his wisdom. You might be familiar with the story of two women who bought a baby to Solomon because they were both saying, it's my baby, I'm the mother. And Solomon said, okay, let's cut the baby in half, you get half each. Sounds drastic, doesn't it? One woman said, fine. The other woman said, no, don't do that. I'd prefer she had it, then you cut it in half. And Solomon said, she's the mother. It is brilliant, isn't it? It understands maternal instinct in a way that most blokes never understand, even though he's a bloke. And so he uses that to actually work out, in a fairly dramatic way, who really is the mother. That's wisdom. Now, you can't read how to do that in a textbook, but it's wisdom, and Solomon became known for all his wisdom. Notice here, wisdom is not confined to Israel. Egypt has it. Other nations have it. But Solomon's wisdom outstripped theirs. It's the same sort of thing. It's not uniquely Christian, but the wisdom of God outstripped the other wisdom. It goes on to say Solomon spoke 3,000 proverbs, the sort of things we get in the book of Proverbs. His songs numbered 1,005. He described plant life and taught about animals, birds, reptiles and fish. Now, it's not that Solomon was just a biologist learning anatomy. He studied animal life, plant life, to understand the human life better. He saw there was wisdom for humans in looking at the ant, for example. And the basis of wisdom is that this world is a creation of a wise God. In Proverbs chapter 8, wisdom speaks. This is her words. The Lord brought me forth as the first of his works before his deeds of old. I was appointed from eternity, from the beginning before the world began. I was there when he set the heavens in place, when he marked out the horizon and the face of the deep, that's the water. He established the clouds above and fixed security, the fountains of the deep. That is, when God created the world and the universe, wisdom was already there. It's not an invention of humanity. It's part of God himself. And when God created, he created with wisdom. So goes on to say in Proverbs 8, wisdom, I was the craftsman at his side. I was filled with delight day after day. It wasn't just an onlooker, wisdom, but was a collaborator in creation. So that creation, the world we experience, including ourselves, is an expression of God's wisdom. God's wisdom permeates everything that God has made. It's infused into the very fabric of the universe. That is, this is not a chaotic, random mess, but the brilliantly designed, functioning cosmos. And that's what most of you are studying at university, isn't it? You're studying some aspects of this cosmos. You're trying to find the order and the wisdom in this creation. Good, do it more. Now, sin has damaged some of that, but the wisdom of God is still evident in everything he's made. That is, there's order in creation. It's designed to work in predictable ways. So you pick up something and drop it, and it goes down. Gravity works, and probably work again the next time I do it. We expect that because this is an ordered creation. You go cooking, you try and cook a cake, and you expect that if you follow the recipe, the same chemical reactions will happen at the right heat and pressure and temperature, and voila, a cake. And when you do it again tomorrow, voila, the same cake. Or maybe not. But it's ordered like that. It's true of physics and chemistry, but it's also true of human behaviour. So psychology and sociology and politics and economics, in a sense, try to explore the world to see the order that is there in those sort of spheres as well. There is order. There is cause and effect. You lie, it'll come back to bite you, because God imposes his wisdom on our world and therefore on our lives. And if God rules with order, then that order is open to observation and investigation. That is, it's open to the sort of empirical methods that a university employs in much of its study and its research. God has given us the capacity and opportunity to discern, to research and discover some of that order in the world, the wisdom that permeates creation. And wisdom is when you discern the order and you live in harmony with it. You live with the grain of the way God runs his world, not across the grain, not against the grain, but with the grain. Now, some of that is pretty simple, isn't it? It's wise not to step off the top of a tall building. You'll almost certainly descend at a very fast rate. That's wise. But a lot of wisdom is much more profound than that. So go back to this one. What's it about? What's it saying? Well, I think you can get to some of what it's saying if you sort of put air quotes around the word friends, couldn't you? Wealth brings many friends. They just gather around because they're real friends. Probably not, maybe not, often almost so certainly not. But the same with the second line, a poor man's friend deserts him. Were they really a friend if they desert him just because he's lost all his money or her money? I presume not. And that makes us stop and think, am I popular? Have I got real friends? Am I a real friend? There's different angles at coming from that insight, that nugget of wisdom, encapsulated in just that little couplet like that one. And so wisdom is that wisdom distilled into sort of generalizations. Now, here's two that are put side by side in Proverbs 26. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you'll be like him yourself. Answer a fool according to his folly, or he'll be wise in his own eyes. So should you answer a fool? They sort of say yes and no at the same time, don't they? Because wisdom is like that. It's not about giving you a rule to follow. It's about giving you some insight that helps you work out what to do in the various different situations that might come. They state the observation, this is what happens. Sometimes this is better than that. But like these two, should you answer a fool? Well, it's going to depend, doesn't it? You need the wisdom to recognise the two possibilities of things going wrong and to work out in each individual situation, what could I do that's best? It's not straightforward. It takes wisdom, not rules. It takes insight, not just following orders. So how do you use? Well, this invites you to reflect, to recognise the sort of nugget of wisdom in each of the statements, chew them over, incorporate into your thinking. And remember, they're generalisations. They're not always true, most of them. So here's another one. Train a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he won't turn from it. Now, this is not a promise from God. This is an observation about the world. So if one of your brothers or sisters has been brought up in good ways but have gone wrong, it doesn't necessarily mean that God has broken his promise. It just means there are exceptions to generalisations. But there's still wisdom in that generalisation. So where do we get wisdom from? How do we acquire it? Well, the first thing to say is, you get it from observation and experience. That is, true wisdom doesn't come from doing courses and reading books, from YouTube videos. You learn it in the school of hard knocks. You learn it from experience of life. You go through things, you fail, you fall over, you pitch on your face, and you get up and think, I wonder what I could learn from that. What did I do wrong? Why was that foolish? How was my ignorance displayed? And you learn from it. Sometimes, of course, experience isn't enough, is it? You just keep doing the dumb, stupid thing, staying up too late or whatever else it might be. It's often a long, slow process. And so you might ask, are there any shortcuts from just living longer and making more mistakes? The answer is yes, there are two shortcuts. One of them is observation. That is, learn from what you see around you and the wisdom you see in the world. So go to the anti-sluggard. Anybody here a sluggard? Anybody here willing to admit they're a sluggard? Okay. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler. It doesn't sort of turn up each day and tell me what to do, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a bandit. But you can learn wisdom by observing what happens in the world closely, studying it, rather than simply from your own experience. Do some research. See what happens in other people's experience. The second way you can shortcut it is by proverbs, that is, by going to the wise who have learnt it the hard way, and you can stand on their shoulders. You can go to people who are wise and say, teach me. And that's what the book of Proverbs is. It's the collected wisdom of the wise, of Solomon, of Agur, of Lemuel, and even Lemuel's mother in Proverbs 30. And so we see the Proverbs are for attaining wisdom and discipline, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life. Read them, but don't read them like you'd read a science textbook, just to memorise it. You could memorise every proverb in the book of Proverbs and be none the wiser. They're riddles, they're parables. They're meant to goad you, provoke you to think. Next week we'll actually have a go at doing that. We'll try and learn how do you learn from Proverbs. You're meant to recognise the truth of it in your own experience or the experience of others and then incorporate that into your life and thinking. They're shortcuts, but it's still not spoon feeding. The aim is to become wise, to become wiser, to gain insight, not to tell you what to do. There it is. I knew I had it somewhere. That's the little plaque hidden away. And I think it is probably that UWA has moved on from wisdom as its main educational goal. And over the next few weeks, this is what we're going to do. We're going to seek wisdom. I hope you're up for it. I hope you're sick of making dumb decisions. But let me try and pull a few things together, four take-homes for us under seek wisdom. First is, wisdom is what God wants for us. If you're a Christian in particular, God wants you to become wise. The very existence of the book of Proverbs in the Bible tells you something. It tells you that God wants us to grow in wisdom to navigate life well. That is, the Christian life is not a life, on the one hand, of just having rules and regulations and you follow them. Nor is it a life where God has got to tell us every decision to make. I don't know what course to do. God, you've got to tell me, otherwise I can't make a decision. NYC, Navigating Life Under God. It really is going to be worth coming because this is part of what we're going to look at. What is the wisdom God gives us in very significant areas like marriage and work? How's all that meant to work in a world where I do make decisions, but I stuff up so often? Here's a prayer from Philippians 1. This is Paul's prayer. He prays for the Philippians that their love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight, that is, in wisdom. Paul prays that those Christians, and us too, would develop wisdom, become deeply wise. Second take home is that secular wisdom can be really useful. You don't have to be a Christian to discern and investigate the order in the world. Research by anybody can yield brilliant, useful data. The old guy next door who's seen a bit of life, he might be able to give you some wisdom as well. You have the privilege of learning at a university. All wisdom ultimately is God's wisdom because he has built it into his creation. So don't be afraid of it. Explore it. Understand it. Make use of it. But remember, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. Without the foundation, often we'll draw wrong conclusions from the data. Now we need the fear of the Lord to shape the wisdom that comes from the information. Thirdly, there's a choice to make. We read Proverbs chapter 9. Proverbs 9 has these two women standing up on the street corners saying, come, come to me, come to me. I've prepared a meal for you. One of them is wisdom. And wisdom says, come, eat my food, drink the wine I've mixed, leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the way of insight. But folly is also out there. She's after your allegiance as well. She says the same sort of thing. Let all who are simple come to my house. Come and feed with me. But that will lead to destruction. It will kill you ultimately. And so it alerts us to the reality that just as a human, as a Christian or not a Christian, I do need to make this heart direction choice. Do I want to become wise or am I willing, am I stubborn enough to just stay foolish? To be simple is not a problem. The simple who's willing to learn will become wise. But the foolish refuses wisdom. They don't want it. They want to keep living their foolish ways. And Proverbs says, don't do it. Choose wisdom. Lastly, God's ways in Jesus. If true wisdom is insight into how God runs the world, then true wisdom must embrace Jesus Christ because he's at the centre of creation. It was all made through him and for him. And Jesus is at the centre of God's actions to redeem the world from evil and death and destruction, especially in his death and resurrection. That's God's master plan in full swing. And so Colossians chapter 2 says something extraordinary. Paul says that his goal in life is that people like you and me might know the mystery of God, namely Christ, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Just think about that for a minute. UWA motto, seek wisdom. That is, come here, we can make you wise. Come to our university, we've got Nobel Prize winners. We've got people at the cutting edge of research in most areas of human endeavour. Come here and find wisdom. And you might find some. But all the treasures of wisdom and understanding are in Jesus. Yes, there's stuff elsewhere as well, but it's not something that you can't get from Jesus. Not real wisdom. Everything that you could ever want in wisdom, you will find in Jesus. Now, how does that work? Well, part of it is Jesus is simply a brilliantly wise person, isn't he? Remember when they came and asked him, should we pay taxes to Caesar? It was a test. It was a test that he was sure to hang on. That they could, whichever way he answered, it was going to be bad for Jesus. Now, Jesus wasn't prepared for that. He didn't have three weeks to study for the exam, knowing that that was going to be a question in the exam. On the spot, he comes back with something that is just brilliant, isn't it? I'm blown away. He says, well, render to Caesar what Caesar's and to God's what is God's. He hangs them on the horns of their own dilemma. That is brilliant. I've never seen someone as wise as Jesus, even on hard quiz. But it's more than that. It's that God's plans and purposes, as they are fulfilled in Jesus, reveal a wisdom that is beyond any wisdom you'll find at UWA. When God sends the Son, the Word becomes flesh. The Word dies in our place, taking the punishment for our sin. The Word rises again to life, to be the ruler of the universe, to promise and guarantee that one day this world would be transformed, to be a world in which evil has been eradicated and life is all it's meant to be. God's way of doing that is stunningly brilliant. And you'll spend the rest of your life digging into that wisdom, digging up the hidden wisdom that's in the cross and resurrection of Jesus Christ. That is where wisdom is to be found. And my invitation to you is, let's dig into that wisdom. As we open the scriptures each week, that's what we're doing. We're uncovering the wisdom of God in Jesus. As we gather in our small groups, as you read the Bible on your own, as you come to NYC, yes, NYC, we'll be digging into that wisdom. And that is the most valuable thing you can do with your time and your mind. Amen.